I don't know if there's anything to be done because it's starting at such an early point in their amateur careers. By the time they get to become a pro, they're well on their way to taxing, especially if we're talking about the ulnar collateral ligament. We're talking about the elbow. We have become very good, and people have made a lot of money in teaching young pitchers how to throw harder. But what we have now is we've rebuilt this engine that's too big for the chassis. We just can't handle, the pitchers can't handle that kind of stress and max effort day in and day out. And that's what's happening. Now, I know there's a lot of talk. The Players Association released something that, you know, the pitch clock is added to that.
There's no evidence of that.
That's right.
Second of all, pitchers have been getting hurt at an accelerated rate since long before the pitch clock started, and it's all about chasing velocity. Yeah. And I saw Dan Heron tweeted something today saying, yeah, guys throwing weighted balls against the wall with a crow hop and all of his bros clapping. This is what we're rewarding now.
That's right.
And you can't tell me that the chase for velocity isn't directly impacting the number of injuries.
100%. And what happens, though, is why I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon, is that if you're a young pitcher and you can throw 92 to 95 on a gun, you're going to be drafted and they're going to pay you $5 million. That's why a lot of this stuff is not going to go away. It's a shame. Dr. James Andrews, probably one of the best in the early operations and shoulders and elbows, said when he first started, the numbers were major league pitchers, minor league pitchers, college, youth baseball. He said it is flip-flop now. It's youth baseball up to the major leaguers. So these kind of injuries are happening as young as in their teens.
If you're a GM and a pitching coach, I would listen to Meister and Andrews and Tim Kremchek and Neil Alatroche. I would get a committee of the five best orthopedic doctors for pitchers, and I would put them in a room, and I would kind of go through how can we keep our guys healthy, how right. can we do it, because to me you're going to have to dial down the obsession with making the exact pitch and the exact mechanic that maximizes the chance for outs, because I'd rather have my aces be able to make 30 starts and be there in October. You know, that's my preference, rather than looking at them on the injured list, having short snapshots of success. I want long careers of 200 innings apiece, and I think that's where the study and the understanding has to come. So instead of you having to throw 98 to 100 on every single pitch, maybe I'll go back and look at Justin Verlander in his prime throwing, you know, 94, 96, and then dialing it up 99 to 100 when he needed it. Maybe that's the better way to go. And he's throwing his fastball 60% of the time, and the breaking ball 20%, and the changeup 20%, and the other changeup 20%. And maybe that's the formula that works better. And yes, maybe your ERA is 3.6 instead of 2.7, and maybe you lose a couple games because of it, but maybe it's better to have him out there for 30 starts and 200 innings than it is to have him out there at 14 starts and 130 innings. And I think that's where the balance is.
All right, we're back. So you heard from Ron Darling and Gary Cohen. You heard from Jim Bowden. Very long intro clip. Jim Bowden of Sirius XM Radio. And we've been talking about this on this show for years, going back to, you know, when Jeff Passan came on years ago. I think he came out in 2017, you know, with his book, The Arm. And even though it's probably a little bit outdated, but it's still very, very relevant, because it talked about youth baseball, and it talked about how injuries have really enhanced the youth level. And if you didn't hear, you know, you heard Ron talk about Dr. James Andrews today, renowned orthopedic surgeon. And the comment he made was how it used to be big league pitchers getting Tommy John surgery, and then it was the college and the minor league. And, well, youth level guys never had surgery. Never had Tommy John surgery. I mean, it was crazy. I remember passing, if I remember correctly, and I didn't have time to really go back and look at, read the book or whatever it may be, but Passon talked about parents wanting their kids back in the day to get Tommy John surgery because it would make them throw harder. And at some point, people looked at this as an oil change. Well, this is an oil change. It's just gonna. It's like the Million Dollar Man, that old show. Let's become bionic. Let's get robot arms. You know, it's funny. I'm watching the game today. My wife looked at me and she said, "Who's not a big baseball fan? There a way that AI could fix this?" And I looked at her. I said, "Well, what do you mean? Like, you mean like put robotic arms on pitchers?" She's like, "Yeah, I mean, and it's a simple." You know, trying to be funny, a funny statement from someone who's not a baseball fan, but how long before somebody says, hey, cut your arm off, here's a bionic arm, like the Million Dollar Man or something. You know, like, wasn't there a movie about a kid that broke his arm and was like, is that Rookie of the Year? And went to pitch for the Cubs or something? I remember the movie, I don't remember which one it is. I mean, maybe that's what we got to do. Maybe that's where we're at, but I'm not here to rail against Driveline, which is embedded everywhere. And you heard what Bowden said, I think it was, about, you know, guys doing the crow hop and throwing hard against the wall and their bros, you know, cheering them on. And there's so many grifters. I don't want to sound like Jeff Fry, who's with you know, a bunch of former big leaguers who are making fun of these coaching experts that go on, make TikTok or YouTube videos that make you think by doing some kind of weird drill you're going to become better as a hitter or a pitcher. And we're trying to reinvent the wheel here. The principles that everybody's been, you know, there's science, there's nothing wrong with science. I mean, think about what TrackMan and Rapsodo and all the technology that has come about in the last decade, how much progress it's made in terms of evaluation. But what it's also done is have every pitcher strive for perfection, normalize and homogenize every pitcher where everybody's pitching the same. The league gets upset when someone like Tony Clark blames the pitch clock. I don't think you could discount that, but to be fair, like Gary Cohen and the booth and any media member is never going to go against the pitch clock because it directly impacts them by not having a pitch clock because you're going to wind up having longer games. I mean, the sport can't be at a point where if the key to success is throwing as hard as you can, resting for 90 seconds to 120 seconds and rear it up again, the game will be too slow. It will become watching paint dry, which is why we're here with the pitch clock. And could that be taken into consideration? Sure. But part of adapting of an athlete is adapting to the game you played. It's just like the NBA. You can't hand check anymore. Learn how to play defense without it. You're not going to play the same type of defense. The scoring, of course, is going to be up. But you can play defense. It's just different. Adapt and adjust. And those who can't, they're not in the league anymore. And that might be the case with pitchers. And I'll use Jacob deGrom because you heard, I think it was Bowden who said, you know, is it necessary to be perfect and throw hard on every pitch? You know, maybe you'll be a run higher, but you'll win. I look at Jacob deGrom from his 2015, and he was hurt. Let's just do 2015, 2016, 2017. That Jacob deGrom would win 12 to 15 games. He had an ERA, a skush above 3. He would average, he had an ERA plus of 131. He would strike out a shade under, a little bit more than a batter an inning, but he would have had a very low walk count. And, you know, a typical year might be 15 and 10. You know, his 2017, when he came back from the ulnar nerve surgery, and then he got off to a slow start, then he came on late. That deGrom, which was 15 and 10 with a 3.53 ERA, it was a good pitcher. I mean, he wasn't Bob Gibson circa 1968, but he was a good pitcher. Now, the Cy Young year, his ERA is 1.70, even though he didn't get any wins. He's over 200 innings. He's got an ERA plus of 218. 2019, not as good, but won a Cy Young again, ERA plus of 169. 2020, pandemic season, ERA plus of 180. His strikeouts go from 8 in 2016, 8, 9 per, you know, almost 1 per 9 innings, up to almost 14 in the pandemic season. And at the end of his Mets career, he was striking out 14 per 9. He was just striking everybody out, throwing 100, throwing 93-mile-an-hour sliders. But guess what? He started 15 games in 21 and 11 games in 22. He started less games in 2 years before he became a Texas Ranger. He only pitched 6 games with Texas last year than he did in his second year in the league at 27 years old. And he was fabulously good, but he was never on the mound. He walked less batters. He struck out way more batters, but he was never on the mound. Give me the 2015 DeGrom. Give me the 2016 DeGrom when he was healthy. Give me the 2017 DeGrom. That's what Bowden's saying. I don't need video game DeGrom, because as exciting as that is for 10, 12, 15 starts, it don't work over the long haul. Was it Cohen or Darling that said the chassis, the engine's too big for the chassis? This is no different than steroids. When steroids enhance you and you build your body up and your frame is only able to handle so much, you are going to break down. There is no enhancement that could overcome Mother Nature. I'm 5'6", 5'7". I'm a short guy. If I bulk up and put so much body, so much muscle on me to be really strong, my frame isn't going to handle it. Now, baseball pitcher, a guy like me trains, I'm too short. They're never going to look at me. Look at guys like Johnny Franco. And I even saw people tweet out Glavins and Maddoxes. They might not get drafted today. I mean, would a guy like Glavin, a crafty lefty, get drafted today? I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, anybody who's under 6 foot tall, forget it, even though they know how to pitch. Look at a Rick Reed. Guy threw 88 to 90, located perfectly, would give you 6-7 innings. Big game pitcher when you needed it. Not sexy. Not sexy. By the way, I'll bring up Rick Reed's numbers right now because he was one of my favorite Mets because he was a big game pitcher and, you know, he was a guy that went through a lot because he crossed the pick line. But look at Rick Reed in 97. 13-9, 2.89 ERA. Only struck out 4.9. 16-11 in 98. One walk per nine, 6.5 strike. He only struck out about 5-6 per game. That's it. That's it. For his career, he was a guy that had a 4 ERA, won about 12 games, you know, strikeout. But he got people out because he located. Nearly threw a couple of no-hitters, by the way, just doing that. That's all it was. But a guy like that, nobody wants to see anymore. And let me tell you, he had some good years with the Mets. He had an ERA plus with the Mets of 117. He won 59. He won 62% of his decisions as a member of the Mets. That's pretty freaking good. If you ask me, nobody wants those pitchers anymore. And you could argue, and he pitched, you know, deeper than five innings, but you could argue that Mets rotation is a lot like the Jeff Supons and the Rick Reeds and guys like that. Nothing sexy. Just give me a quality start. Rick Reed was not a sexy pitcher. He wasn't like Clemens or Randy Johnson or even Al Leiter. And here's where the league has to get serious, and the owners. Because the league and the owners are going to say, ah, you guys are throwing too much spin on the thing. You're throwing too hard. Adjust. We're not changing the pitch clock. By the way, owner A, B, C, whether it's Cohen, Steinbrenner, whoever, John Middleton, your player development people and scouting department, they ain't going to sign Rick Reeds. They ain't going to sign Jeff Supon types. They don't want them. Julio Teheran is very similar to that. He don't strike out a lot of guys. Does he know how to pitch? I guess we'll see tomorrow. I mean, Minaya has evolved. I mean, he's been very impressive through his first two starts. Moving the ball up and down in the zone. Velocity's up. Good location. Multiple pitches. Able to really locate when he needs to. But, you know, part of that was velocity. I mean, tell me what pitcher like a Rick Reed would have a job today. Really, what pitcher like a Rick Reed would have a job today? You can't answer that. And by the way, that was a pretty valuable piece. And not just because he was in the Mets. It would have been a valuable piece for any rotation for a contending team. Maybe he's just a number three, and he was maybe miscast a couple of times as a top of the rotation guy with the Mets. But he was solid. He was good. He was good. So now, the owners are throwing at the players. The players are throwing it at the owners saying, well, you know, it's the pitch clock. The owners are saying, shut up and stop throwing so hard. But, you know, their own teams, their own player development guys are encouraging that. So you know what? Something's got to give. And the owners aren't going to like the answer. They don't want to give up the pitch clock. And they certainly, nobody's going to pioneer starting to advocate for less velocity and better, And pitchers that strike out less guys and just, you know, pitch to contact and pitch to the score and just get outs, the old-fashioned ground ball, 6-3, fly ball, center field. Everybody wants to play caveman baseball, especially out of the bullpen. So then you're going to have to expand the roster, and you're not going to like it because it's going to cost you some money, to 28, 29, and 30 all year. You're going to have, just like the NBA, you're going to have actives and inactives. And those guys are going to get benefits. Those guys are going to get service time. Those guys are going to at least get league minimum. And believe me, if it did happen, forget that. You know, I saw an article about Brandon Belt. He can't get a roster spot. Nobody wants to sign him. You know, forget about veterans. Nobody's going to give them any money. This is, if they expanded, it's going to all be league minimum guys. The Mets had the ability to have more relievers on their roster. Sean Reed Foley would be on. Tonkin never would have been designated for assignment. Think about it. Tonkin has no job now. He probably will get one because they don't have enough roster spots. They need an arm. So that's going to cost money. It's going to cost you three more roster spots. Okay, just let's do the math. What is it? $750,000 is the league minimum? $750,000. Right now it's a 20. Well, let's say they just do two more roster spots for pitchers. Times two, that's 1.5 million times team. That's $45 million a year extra. Back of the paper bag, man. $45 million a year extra for two more spots, league minimum players all year. Plus benefits, service time. Owners are, oh, I don't want to pay $45 million. Well, would you rather pay $45 million times three for your starter to be on the injured list the entire length of that stupid contract that you signed? Like, at some point, everybody wants it their way. This is the problem I have in general with society today. Nobody understands causation because they haven't been educated enough and they're lazy to learn how simple things work, like economics, okay? And this is not just average Joe and Jane and people like you and me. We're talking about billionaires and millionaires. Well, I want, you know, no pitch clock. I want a pitch clock. And you need to adjust. And by the way, while you adjust, I'm not going to draft you and you're not going to get paid. So what am I going to do? Dedicate my life to go play for the Long Island Ducks? The Trenton Thunder? Of course not. They got better things to do to earn a living. So something's got to give. People and teams. Now, it's not going to happen from a big market team like the Mets or Yankees. There might be a team that's in no man's land, has no chance of winning, and say, you know what? We can have our pitchers be effective and stay healthy by doing this. It will be years before it changes. It is so embedded. I think velocity became a thing. I think the Mets had something to do with it. Think about when DeGrom was blowing people away in the Dodgers series in 2015, and Noah Syndergaard came up and was blowing people away, and Matt Harvey was playing. I mean, think about it. I don't remember Velo, and maybe Strasburg was also part of that whole situation when he came up. This is probably about 10 to 15 years in the making. Because if you look at some of the rotations, even the Yankees rotation, sure you had Clemens, but even guys like Mussina and Pettit, they weren't throwing 100 miles an hour on every pitch. Mariano Rivera struck out tons of people early in his career, but as he came on, it was location. He could throw hard, but it was location. You throw 92, 93 and locate, you'll get people out. Trust me, you'll get people. Hitting is hard. And even if you have a good swing, all it takes is 2 inches in on the handle, whether you're lefty or righty, and that's going to be a fly ball. It doesn't have to be 5 miles an hour more. Now, would it look impressive, blowing the guy away and making him look stupid? Sure. And you'll be on Pitching Ninja, and you'll be on TikTok, and everybody will go gaga, and we like these video game numbers because that's what we're about. We're about breaking records. So when DeGrom does 15 strikeouts per nine, we love it. Guy pitched in 15 frickin' starts. Imagine if he was healthy for the whole year in 2022. Maybe the Mets win 108 games, and they blow past the Braves. But no, his shoulder started to go. And then the solution with some people, well, let's just not drive the car. Let's leave the car in the driveway. Unless it's the perfect day, the perfect trip, and basically you buy this expensive car and it sits in your driveway, and you're like, wow, that looks good, but I only drive them on Sundays. And then you get into an accident anyway. Oh, geez, what could I have done? Well, it's random. It is a mess. And if you look at the Mets, Stearns isn't stupid. I give him credit in one thing. He didn't go. I mean, Yamamoto, we'll see where he turns out. he's a risk. You know, you gave him $300 million, what was it, for 7 years, whatever they're giving him. I mean, you start throwing $300 million contracts like you did for Gerrit Cole. Pitchers are very highly likely to have dead money. One thing with Correa and plantar fasciitis and feet. Another thing with Lindor and how his game will age as he gets north of 30. Zach Scott talked about this where, you know, you sign these long-term contracts, you're probably going to get underwater value at some point. You know, a 7, 8, 9 year contract, you're going to have 3 years at least, probably. 10 year contract, maybe 4 years of underwater value. But overall, it's worth it because you get a pretty good player for majority of it. It's depreciating asset. It's no different than buying a car. I always have said that. Athletes and athlete contracts are like buying cars. Not like buying houses, although we'll see as our economy evolves if houses are such a great investment. Depending on the market, I guess I would say. You know it's going to depreciate. You'll have some value at the end of the life, but it depends what kind of condition it's going to be in. If it's cash for clunkers condition and you spend, you know, $120,000 on it, that sucks. Maybe you could get 20% of its value if you time it right, depending on what kind of car it is and whatnot. So I've gone off a little tangent there, but this is a problem. And here's where the league is headed. The league is headed exactly where the Mets are. Five inning starters, bullpens that are going to get burnt out, and games more frequently than you think are going to be like Saturday afternoon where you don't have enough pitching and it's going to get ugly early. And if you think people are going to stick around to see Omar Narváez get on a mound and pitch or Zach Short get on a mound and pitch for two innings and throw lollipops like it's a Sunday softball league over in whatever park is near your house, let me tell you, the fact that the amount of position players pitch every year is embarrassing to this league. Embarrassing. It is. I'm sorry. It's like, you know, you remember Tom Tupa, who used to be the quarterback for the Jets? He was the punter, but he's like a third stringer. It's like putting the Tom Tupas of the world in every, you know, all over the league just to get through the game because you don't have enough quarterbacks. So, to me, time to wake up. You have two choices. You start to develop and figure out a way to do this better and take the driveline grifters and any other grifter out of the location, start to question what they're really doing here. Because they're going to point everything at everybody else because it's their business model. Nobody's going to attack their business. Once they get in the club, it's no different than politics. Once you're in the club, you'll defend your position, whether it's right or wrong, because you don't want to stop drinking at the trough. There's a lot of water in that trough when you're in the baseball trough. Or you're going to have to bite the bullet and expand the freaking rosters all year, not just September. You're going to have to make it two more spots for pitchers, minimum, maybe four. You don't like it? Then you're going to get ugly and more injuries and more good pitchers will be injured and not just starters, bullpen arms. You can't sit here and have two positions, the Players Association and the owners, and both of them are fighting each other. And the owners are just as guilty because they're like, oh, well, you know, pitch clock, there's no data behind it. Yeah, but you damn well know your teams are training these guys like Ivan Drago to be all-out machines, and the bodies, human body can't handle it. Here's the FYI, guys. We could evolve technologically in science and information to crazy levels in our society, and I'm sure after I'm long gone, there'll be more. But the human body is only capable of so much because it's a human body. And unless you're going to build robots like my wife made the joke about, which is, you know, wait till that goofy idea comes. Because that's a goofy idea that's going to happen. Well, we can't keep pitchers healthy, so we'll just put robots on the mound and let the best team win. I'm telling you. You laugh. Mark my words, there's some goofball that's going to say that. And when they do, remember I told you, there's going to be a goofball that's going to suggest that. Because instead of just doing things to adapt and adjust, everybody's got to go to the next level and justify their point of view. So there's that. All right, enough of this. I've had enough. I'm getting agitated. Let me take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up. I'm going to let you know about a nice, for those who are subscribers to the Substack newsletter, I'm going to have a nice vault audio for you guys to listen to this week, so stay tuned for that. But more importantly, Francisco Lindor has had a horrible start to the season. He had a great game today. He's one of the reasons why they won. Could have had an even better game, got into a little bit of bad luck with a hard hit ball with the bases loaded. But on Friday, some fans decided to attack Lindor's family. I think that it ties into a conversation I had with our good friend from Subway to Shea, Anthony Rivera. It's a conversation I've had on last week's show. It's a conversation I've had on X. It's a conversation that I've had on the Substack newsletter, and a lot of people don't like it. Some do. And it's about fan behavior and where we are as a fan base and how I believe we're at an inflection point. And I think what happened to Lindor's family on Friday is a wake-up call that we need to take very seriously. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.